Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. There is a crisis at the U.S. southern border. The Department of Homeland Security is suspending horse patrols following claims of agents whipping Haitian nationals at the border. President Biden temporarily suspending agents on horseback as the incident in Del Rio, Texas is being investigated. This coming after the U.S. Special Envoy for Haiti resigned over the deportation of Haitian migrants from the Texas-Mexico border this morning. In a letter submitted to the Secretary of State, Ambassador Daniel Foote said he won't, quote, be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti. What's going on down there? We're talking about this ever-changing, fluid situation. My guest is Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor at Howard University, and of course you, our guests, our listeners, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Carter, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you participating in the conversation.
Thank you so much, Harold.
A lot to work with today. This situation is, as I just mentioned, extremely fluid. Texas Governor Greg Abbott praising the Border Patrol there as they line the border with SUVs, dozens upon dozens upon dozens of them, to prevent the Haitian nationals from coming into the country. The images there, the optics are a mess, but for a lot of people, usually prior to the Haitians coming there, they're used to seeing brown people, people of Spanish descent coming over. Where are the Haitians coming from?
Well, many had left Haiti a number of years ago and had gone to places like Brazil and Chile and sort of made their way up to Mexico, many leaving months in advance, trying to get to the U.S. border, hoping that they could make an asylum claim and seek refuge in this country.
Mm-hmm. And so, but they're just showing up now?
Well, no. Some had stopped along the way. I mean, people were coming with very little, so they might stop off in a place and be there for a while because they need to make money so that they can, you know, afford the journey. I mean, and they're not traveling, you know, in luxury liners, right? I mean, many people are traveling by foot. They're hitchhiking. They're doing whatever they can. So people have had stop-offs along the way, you know, trying to get to or as close as they could get to the border. They're stuck, of course, in Mexico because of our policy of stopping in Mexico first before a person can be granted any assistance where asylum is concerned.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that has happened this week, and this thing has really moved very, very quickly, and I think that it really came to a head when we saw the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents on horseback using their reins, which as whips, what was first thought to be whips, but they're horse reins, the things that horseback riders use to guide the horses. But the imagery, as I said, the optics of that are very, very painful, particularly for people of color in this country. And the Biden administration, and particularly White House spokesperson Jen Psaki, did her best to address that on Monday. From your perspective, how much damage did that do to the Biden administration as they tried to handle the optics of that?
Well, listen, I mean, what the Biden administration essentially is saying to all of us is, who are you going to believe, me or your eyes, right? Mm. I mean, we all could see, and whether you call them split reins or whips, those images were very visceral. I mean, you see people who are utterly beleaguered being rounded up and attacked, and I don't think there's any way around it. The other thing that the Biden administration can't get around is continuing Donald Trump's Title 42 policy, which essentially says the border is closed to anyone coming from a place with communicable disease. Well, we know the whole world is a big communicable disease right now in the middle of this pandemic. So, you know, the Biden administration really doesn't have any cover. And I think, you know, you look at Envoy Foote's resignation letter today, I think it's even more damning. And they can spin that any way they would like, but I don't think that they have any takers in terms of believing their story that they're trying to be humane. You're deporting people in the middle of a pandemic to a country that has experienced yet another natural disaster, that it has been in economic upheaval and is now in political straits because their leader was assassinated this summer. And you think that that makes sense? I mean, I think the Biden administration is floundering here, and there's nothing that they can do to walk back what they've already committed to, which is the full-scale deportation of any Haitian asylum seeker.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Haitian crisis at the Mexico-U.S. border. Wrap your head around that situation. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us right now is Ionita Baker. She is the president-elect of the National Bar Association. Ms. Baker, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Your perspective on the legal ramifications of what we are seeing at the border, because right now, as Professor Carter just said, you've had so far thousands of Haitian migrants deported back to Haiti, flown back to Haiti, but then we've had reports that some have been allowed to come into the United States and still others are kind of in limbo. There was discussion about the TPS, temporary protected status. Can you explain that? And just from your perspective, what is happening there?
Okay, I cannot explain, you know, the differences in the temporary status. But what I can say is just from a legal perspective and due process rights, they should be given and afforded an opportunity to seek asylum in the United States. And what they're doing by, you know, transporting them back to Haiti is creating a situation where if they never make it into the United States, they're saying, oh, they're not entitled to these asylum hearings. And that's something that they're intentionally doing. They're not allowing them to enter the United States. Well, that's not right. No other group is treated that way outside of, you know, the Haitian migrants. We've not seen it to this scale like that. And so, you know, there's due process issues, fairness, and then just in general, the way that we've seen and the reports of how the Haitian migrants have been treated by U.S. Agents. And I came in on the tail end and heard, you know, it stated that the administration cannot walk it back. And I want to be careful of saying that, because what we do want is for the administration to allow these migrants in and go through the process of seeking asylum. And the National Bar Association has partnered with Bridge Haiti to mobilize attorneys that specialize in immigration law to give representation to the Haitian migrants in their hearings.
So how would that work?
How would what work?
You just said that in partnering with Bridge Haiti to have legal representation for the Haitian migrants. So how would that legal representation work? We're talking about thousands of people.
Yeah, and everyone is entitled to representation. our organization is not going to be the only organization mobilizing attorneys to do this work. There are people, there are attorneys that specialize in immigration law, and they're well equipped to handle these cases, and they do a number of these cases on any given day. And so what we're saying is give these people the same, give the Haitian migrants the same due process rights that you give to other groups of people seeking asylum. Mm-hmm. And that is a process through a court of law, and that's what attorneys do.
Mm-hmm. Professor Carter, do you have any understanding of the TPS, the temporary protected status that White House spokesperson Jen Psaki spoke about earlier mm-hmm. this week during the White House briefing, where she said they were looking into seeking that status for the migrants at the border?
Well, yes, and let me be clear. When I was saying walk it back, I meant the pictures, not their policy. They can always do more. So mm-hmm. I agree with your guess there. But TPS is basically granted to countries when there is some sort of political unrest or natural disaster that makes it too unstable for people to be returned home. And the issue of patient TPS has come up several times over the years and has been offered at different points, right? There was Tropical Storm Jean. There was an earthquake in 2010. And it's sort of like a kind of relief, a temporary relief, because whenever the United States decides that it wants to revoke TPS, meaning that the situation at home has changed, then the people who have been allowed to be here legally and working temporarily are expected to uproot themselves and go back to their home country, right? Currently, TPS has been granted to Haitians. Donald Trump, you noticed, remembered, had tried to revoke it. But TPS right now is safe for Haitians already residing in the United States until 2023. So those people who have not made it into the country, it's unclear. And while the United States government is saying they might consider granting TPS for those at the border, they are also looking into contracts for people who are trying to come to the U.S. by boat and to keep them at Guantanamo Bay so they never make it to the United States for many of the reasons Attorney Baker just named, which is they're not entitled to due process when they're not in the United States. So they want to keep them from coming to the United States. So, I mean, the political situation has been brewing for a while. We've known that Haiti's been unstable for a long time. The United States government could have done something to assist the migrants because they didn't just get to the border today. Mm-hmm. They've been at the border for months. And they could have done something much, much sooner. And it won't be retroactive, right? So it won't change anything about the people who are currently being processed for deportation, for the people who've already been deported, and for the people who are being interdicted at sea and summarily sent back to Haiti. So I'm unsure that TPS is going to bring the relief that we want it to. It will, of course, it can do something, so we don't want to shut that down. But mulling it over now because you've been caught with your pants down, proverbially, right?
Yes.
it seems a little bit of a short shrift, right, for those Haitian migrants.
I agree with the professor on there on those very same issues, and that's why I say at this point what we've seen from the administration, and let's be clear, if this was our former president that was engaging in this behavior, mm-hmm. more people would be calling him out on the immigration policy. And so we can't allow President Biden and the administration mm-hmm. to get away with what we've seen mm-hmm. and the treatment of the Haitian migrants. It is reprehensible. It's inhumane. No one deserves to be treated that way. And how hard is it to give these individuals TPS, that protective status? We see, and she's correct, you know, we saw from the murder of the president, then the earthquake. I mean, it's been so much going on in Haiti. They need refuge. We don't do any other group this way, and we should not be treating our Haitian brothers and sisters in this manner. And we shouldn't allow any administration to get away with it.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Haitian migrant crisis at the U.S. southern border. Let's go to Kendall. Kendall calling from Prince George's County. Kendall, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Harold, thanks for having me.
Sure.
You know, I jumped in on the back end of this conversation. However, I just wanted to make mention that I find it interesting how the Haitian community is constantly alienated and treated like, you know, second-class citizens. You know, when we are evacuating people from, when the U.S. government is evacuating people from a country where the president said that they have an army of thousands of troops who are willing and able and an Air Force, we evacuate them, we offer them housing, we offer them stimulus payments, all types of resources. But the Haitian community, who had been at our borders for years, they're met with whips and horses. I find that to be devastating. And in fact, to further drive home my example of how they are always mistreated, you know, if something were to happen in the DR, you know, everyone's there. But Haiti, which is on the same island, a lot of people forget that Haiti and the Dominican Republic, the Dominican Republic is on the same island, but the resources and attention and everything that they receive, there's a large difference between the two. Yeah. And I think that needs to be addressed. I think that we need to get down there, and we need to clean up that mess on at the border, and we need to get those people off those horses, take those whips back, and treat those people with some humanity.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point. Mm-hmm. And I do want Dr. Carter to address that, but I do have to take a break. I do want to thank Ionita Baker for joining the conversation, the incoming president of the National Bar Association, for joining the conversation. So thank you so much. Going to take a quick break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com. You can also download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2, the app, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a moment with more of this conversation. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. We're talking about the Haitian migrant crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. We continue tonight with our guest, Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor here at Howard University. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were talking to Kendall, Dr. Carter, and basically he raised a question that I was going to raise earlier. What is the difference between the Haitian migrants and the Afghan refugees? What's the difference? I'm sorry. What's the difference between what's happening with the Afghans and the Haitians?
Difference is the fact that the United States feels like they have an interest in Afghanistan, that they have really wreaked havoc on this country, and now they need to make sure that Afghan people are kept safe. Now, the same could be said of Haiti, right? The United States has occupied that island. The United States has been stalwart in propping up regimes that they knew were harming the Haitian people. And they did that because they were our anti-communist ally in the Caribbean against Cuba. And, you know, the Haitian people have been saying, though, for years, that United States measures have been more of a hindrance than a help. But I think the main thing is that we don't find anything of value in Haiti, right? They're not our main trading partner. They're not a country that we view as being all
strategic.
That important.
Yeah, they're not a strategic partner.
No, unless they're standing against Cuba. But that's not even as central any longer to our sort of geopolitical landscape as it was, you know, 40 years ago. But I want to make it clear, this policy of denying asylum or claims of Haitians has been ongoing. This does not belong to a singular administration. It belongs to several administrations. This is decades-long practice, and I can't say or stress that enough.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to Laura calling from Silver Spring. Laura, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Laura, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Let's go to David calling from Virginia. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Listen, I'm more upset about where did my vote go to? Because we voted for Kamala Harris as a vice president to represent the minority, although I didn't think she would, and Biden, and before you shout me down, I thought that Val Demings and others would have been a better fit. Because black people, whether it be in America or coming from other countries, we always get the dookie stick. Nobody wants to do for us. They add brown people, fine. But why we got to add brown people when it comes to taking care of us and our people? Because we have done more in this country than anyone. And where's our representation? Where's Pamela Harris? Kamala Harris? I hear even women asking the question, where is she? What is she doing? What is she doing? Why did she allow Biden to do nothing for the situation to blow up as it has blown up, whipping people on horses? That's slavery stuff. And here we are in the 21st century, and we're still dealing with this. And every time it comes to doing something for black people, we get off the subject. Just put somebody in office that got a black face, and that's supposed to satisfy the African-American community. We want all.
Let me see what Dr. Carter has to say about that. I think that's right up your alley, Dr. Carter, because he's brought up some very complex issues as it relates to blackness and politics in this country. He's talked about history. He's talked about current events. That's your wheelhouse.
Well, I'll say this. Kamala Harris is the number two. She can't allow or disallow Joe Biden from doing anything. He's the president. And as they say, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And so I think we need to place the blame where it belongs, at his feet. The other thing is, Kamala Harris has been given a lot of things in her portfolio. So she's been given the border. She's been given, I think, police reform. She's been given a range of things that in some ways, as a new vice president, it's like she's being set up to fail. Now, this is not a defense of the indefensible. I don't think that there's anything that any administration could offer, but I do think we need to spread that blame a little bit, and to leave it all at the foot of the feet of a black woman, I am very uncomfortable doing. But I understand the caller's frustration, because we thought that this new administration would bring, you know, sunshine and rainbows. And what we found is an administration that, to David's point, is doing everything, it seems, but addressing those issues of the most concern to the black constituents, who, quite frankly, are a significant part of the Democratic base and delivered huge wins in really important places like Pennsylvania, like Georgia. And so where does our kind of recompense come in? And I think that's a valid critique. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see that probably again at the election booth, because people are going to be tired of hearing, well, the other guy is worse, so pick me. Because now you can't blame Donald Trump. Now this is your ship, and it's your job to write it. And I think when we look at the Haitian case, no one has had the political will over the last 40-plus years where we've seen the numbers of Haitian asylum seekers coming to the U.S. to really do anything about this particular issue.
Mm-hmm. David, thank you so much for raising some really important points. From your perspective, Dr. Carter, what you're not the president, and so you have the luxury of throwing out some ideas, and if they don't stick, you can just shrug your shoulders. But what should the president do about this issue in Haiti? They've already sent thousands back. They've let some in. Some are sitting there. What's the fix?
Well, I mean, look, I don't think there's a simple fix, and I think any fix that's going to have to happen cannot be imposed on the Haitian people. We have to respect the people of Haiti and their sovereignty. I also think we need to be very clear that one of Haiti's biggest problems are environmental, right? I mean, deforestation. These kinds of things lead to natural disasters. Food insecurity and poverty are reasons why people are leaving. I think people would rather stay home in most instances, but lots of people leave home when home is not a safe place. That is no different for the Haitian people who are leaving because the situation is unstable. And so if we're not thinking about environmental issues, if we're not talking about, you know, kleptocracy by the government, right, where they're embezzling taxpayer funds for personal gain, then we're never going to get to a root of a problem. On the other side, there's what we can do and what we control as this country. And I just wanted to say, from 1972 to 1980, there were about 50,000 petitions for asylum filed by Haitians, and fewer than 100 were granted. That number, unfortunately, hasn't changed very much. And we're going to see a continuation of this policy. Now, the U.S. could do an about-face and say, you know what, we're going to allow these people into the country, we're going to allow them an opportunity to work, and we're actually going to hear their claims. But one of the first things the United States has to do is stop talking about Haitian refugee seekers, or Haitian asylum seekers, excuse me, as economic migrants, like they're just, you know, farm laborers who are going from town to town making a living, because that's what we're doing. We're saying they're economic migrants, not political migrants, which means that if we say they're economic migrants, they have no rights of recognition under any sort of international human rights claim, and that has to cease. So there are things that we can do immediately on our end, and then there are things we can do to make sure and to support Haiti and the Haitian people in making their country as stable as possible, because as the earlier call was said, the island is on the other side is Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. And we know that the Dominican Republic has a thriving tourism industry and other kinds of things. So it's not as if Haiti couldn't have those things.
Again.
We also, again, absolutely, because the United States and other partners in the West, because it's not just the United States, have routinely crippled the Haitian economy in some really important ways. And I think, you know, sort of laying this, treating this like a contemporary issue rather than a century one, is kind of going to be, or will doom us to repeating the same kinds of things over and over again with respect to Haiti.
Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor at Howard University, thank you so much for sharing your insight on the program. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Now joining us, Brian Concannon. He is a board member and founder of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Mr. Concannon, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure thing.
Thanks so much for covering Haiti.
Sure. And there is a lot to cover. Certainly we can't cover it all now, but I want to take you back to the very beginning of this conversation to get your perspective. And I really want to start with the resignation of the U.S. Special Envoy, Ambassador Daniel Foote, and what he said in his resignation to the Secretary of State, in part being associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants back to Haiti. Your thoughts about his very public resignation?
That was a remarkable document. I've never seen such a public resignation from the State Department, and I've never seen such a candid assessment of U.S. policy from any U.S. envoy since Frederick Douglass gave a speech at the World's Fair in 1893. I mean, it really is remarkable, not just the section you quoted about the deportations or the treatment of people at the border. That's really the low-hanging fruit morally, because that is certainly spectacularly racist. But there's other things that are less spectacular, but just as racist and even more harmful because they affect more people. And one of them is the fact that they've been deporting tens of thousands of Haitians under Title 42, which is A, illegal, B, a violation of the Refugee Convention, and C, an abuse of public health messaging. But the other thing that the U.S. has been doing, and as Dr. Carter mentioned, we've got to go way back, and we've had two centuries of of undermining Haitian democracy and preventing Haiti's government from providing the basic services that Haitians need to live a life of safety and dignity. And, you know, Haiti's a wonderful place. It's a vibrant culture. It's just it's amazingly beautiful. Haitians are going to stay there if they can. They, like everybody else, they like to stay home for the most part. And most Haitians are leaving very reluctantly, but because they feel they don't have any choice. And what the U.S. needs to do, and Mr. Foote was very, Ambassador Foote was very clear about this, we need to allow Haiti to develop. We need to stop supporting the current government, which is repressive and corrupt, and we need to allow a Haitian solution to emerge and for Haitians to choose their own leadership.
But for the uninitiated, who can only look at things, you know, kind of on the surface, and it's very difficult, obviously, to set, you know, aside the natural disasters, because certainly that has not helped. The earthquake this year did not help. The earthquake in 2010, even more horrific. And I was in Haiti in 2011, 1 year after that, and saw the economic impact, the psychological damage that was done by that earthquake, and the difficulty in attempting to rebuild, and indeed the resilience of the Haitian people. But in the aftermath of the 2010 earthquake, and so many questions about the attempt to rebuild Haiti, questions about the Red Cross and the NGOs and American dollars going into Haiti. Now, you know, Joe Sixpack, Jane Sixpack sitting on the couch, who may be concerned about the future of Haiti, who may have given to Haiti in 2010, and now seeing what's happening now, can you blame them if they are reluctant to open their wallets?
No, I can't. And especially because Joe and Jane aren't listening to shows like yours that are explaining the context. And part of the problem is that Haiti, that has always been the way that Haiti's always been covered in a very superficial way by our media. It's discussed in a superficial way by our politicians. They use stereotypes, typically racist stereotypes. Haiti's a basket case. Haiti's a failed state. Freed black, and, you know, going back to the 19th century, freed black people can't run a country. And so nobody ever looks, or too infrequently do our political leaders or our media look at why Haiti is like that. And, you know, the earth shook in 2011. That was a natural disaster. But the outsized damage, or 2010, sorry, the outsized damage that you saw, that was not all natural. A lot of that damage happened because people were living in houses that were substandard, were built on places that were too steep, and that the government didn't enforce its zoning rules and also didn't give people what they needed to live in a safer place. I first got to Haiti in the 1990s, and at the time there was a transition from a dictatorship, and people were hoping that this was Haiti's last democratic transition. You'd have uninterrupted democracy. And democracy worked for 9 years. Haiti had spectacular growth in education, healthcare, economy, everything. And then in 2004, the U.S. didn't like the direction that Haiti was going, didn't like its leaders, elected leaders, economic policies. So we pulled the plug on democracy. We forced Haiti's elected president onto a plane that sent him to exile. After that, that was actually 2003 was the high point in Haiti's democracy. We've never gotten back to that. You've had, for the last 10 years, you've had very corrupt regimes supported by the United States that have pillaged the money that you talked about that was generous that Joe and Jane Sixpack gave. They raided the state treasury, so the government is not able to provide basic government services, including health care and education. The economy has really suffered with hyperinflation and devaluation of the money, so people can't eat. All of these are natural or man-made causes as a result of decisions. Some of the decisions were made in Haiti, but a lot of the decisions were made in the United States.
So what is the fix from your perspective? If because on one hand, you're saying that if the United States pulled the plug in 2004 because they didn't like the way things were going, and allowed Haiti to go its own way, which was downhill, but the other side of that argument is, if the United States pulled the plug and you have this country, which then had the opportunity to govern itself and it could not. So, you know, which is it? Can they go it alone without the United States, or do they need the United States to back it up?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And my pull the plug metaphor was a bad one, because the U.S. didn't pull the plug in the sense that they stopped U.S. help and went away. It's the exact opposite. They literally kidnapped Haiti's president.
Yeah, I mean, they pulled the political, you know, they made the change. And I guess what I'm saying is, I understand exactly what you mean. I mean, if we had our perfect druthers, you know, could the United States economically support Haiti and let it go its own way? Is that a political experiment that's doomed to failure or promising success?
Yeah, what Haitians would suggest, and this is what Daniel Foote was suggesting, but no one would listen to him, is support democracy in Haiti, is allow Haitians to elect their leaders and not interfere with them. I think it's helpful for the U.S. to provide economic support, but I think if you asked most Haitians and they had a choice between continued economic support from the U.S. with continued interference in their democracy, they would, and if that was on one choice, and the other choice was the U.S. just doesn't do anything for Haiti, I think they would prefer the U.S. doesn't do anything for Haiti. And U.S. policy is often described as neglect for Haiti. It's never been neglect. The U.S. has always paid huge attention to Haiti. The U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince is the third or fourth biggest U.S. embassy in the whole world.
Yeah, I've been in there. I mean, it's huge. It's a fortress. As a matter of fact, that was one of the things that Ambassador Foote mentioned. He didn't mention the size, but he mentioned that it was a fortress, because, and he said it was, uh-huh, you know, paraphrasing, you know, walled against the gang violence that is there. I mean, as it is in many places across the country, and let's not just single across the world, let's just not single out Haiti, it looks like a prison.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, none of that, when democracy was working in the 90s and the international community was interested in supporting it, you had gang violence, but people were living, I lived in Haiti for 9 years, never the victim of violent crime. And people, you could go out at night, you could more or less circulate freely. You weren't always worried about violence. And the school, the literacy level was going up. More people than ever were going to school. I mean, things were working, and it seems superficial to say this, but it really is the solution, the same solution that Haitians have been calling for and that Dan Foote did, is really to allow Haitians to run their country themselves. We may think we're smarter, maybe we're more educated. That might be true, but we need to allow Haitians. Only Haitians can really make decisions about where their economy can go, how their government runs and who gets to lead them. And it's just extremely difficult for the U.S. to let that happen, but we've got to overcome whatever obstacles we have and allow that to happen. I mean, and again, Daniel Foote's resignation and the fact that he did such an extraordinarily public one just shows how deep-seated the problem was, that here he was saying common sense suggestions that were reflecting of what the vast majority of Haitians wanted, and they wouldn't listen to him.
Yeah. One of the, so, you know, we've got one thing in the Caribbean, obviously, but now we've got this other situation at the southern border of the U.S. is the situation that, while the publicity is a week or two old, this has been going on for months. What is the fix from your point of view for that situation? As I mentioned in the beginning of this program, before you were on, there are multi-level optics that have really put the Biden administration in an extremely bad light. We had, obviously after pulling out of Afghanistan and the difficult optics of that, but then you had the pictures of them coming into Dulles and them being, welcomed with open arms and going to Quantico and all of these other kinds of things and American Marines and the like taking care of these Afghan refugees, but yet we now have these Haitian nationals at the border being chased with the reins of U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents, and they are in really desperate situations, and some being flown back, some still there, some being allowed in. Talk to me about, number one, the optics and what you think the fix could possibly be.
I'm going to agree with Dr. Carter when she said that this is a long-term problem and that you're not going to have a quick fix that's really going to take care of it. The people that are at the border now have been fleeing Haiti, fleeing the corruption and the violence of the current rulers over the last 10 years. And so they've kind of accumulated in South America for different reasons. They haven't been able to live a life of safety and dignity in South America, and so they're coming up. That's a long-term problem. I think the administration can manage it better than they've been doing, but it's still going to be a challenge. One of the optics that you raised, obviously, is this comparison between the Afghans and the Haitians. We were able to evacuate 124,000 Afghans in a very short period of time, and these include people. I mean, Afghan is a country that has a major terrorist threat. And, of course, the Taliban and others were trying to send people to get through there so that we could have terrorism, that there's a terrorism risk here. Haiti is a country without a terrorism threat, so it's a much easier thing to do to process Haitians who are already in their country than it is to, and pose no threat, to try to process 125,000 Afghans who are thousands of miles away and bring them in safely. So if we can handle the Afghan airlift, we can handle 8,000 Haitians. Another example, of course, is the Mariel boat lift in the 1980s. We had about the same amount as the Afghan, about 125,000 Haitians, Cubans, many of them released directly from jail, came into Miami. We were able to handle that. So we can do this. I think the starting point should be the law. I think we should say, that Title 42, as the judge said last week, is illegal, and we should not use that. I think that we need to give people an asylum hearing who are requesting one and with some due process. But one of the things that's part of the optics that if we had Joe Biden on the line today, he gave us we gave him some truth serum. He would probably agree with our suggestion that this is illegal and unconscionable to be sending these people back. But I think what he would say is that he needs to show that he has the border secured in order to convince middle America that we can do some of these other things, like let the dreamers in and let more agricultural workers in. And that's what the administration people are telling you when they're not on the news. But the problem is that whole idea of middle America and securing the borders is all racially charged if you dig not too far beneath the surface. And part of the optics are that you have a lot of white supremacist groups that keep their main concern is that we are losing a European majority in the United States, and they're doing whatever they can to stop it. And among that is
driving a lot of the optics, creating hysteria. And even Title 42 itself was started by Stephen Miller, immigration advisor, who comes from a white supremacist background, and he too is committed to keeping America as white as he can. And we need the Biden administration needs to understand who's behind this. It needs to understand that by making concessions to white supremacists, you're not going to bring people along. You're going to show white supremacists that their fear-mongering works, and you're going to encourage them to do more. This has been happening, and as Dr. Carter mentioned, I mean, this has been happening for decades. They did the same thing that they're doing to Biden, to President Obama. They did the same thing to President Bush. They did the same thing to President Clinton. And they're going to keep doing it as long as it works. And I know it's difficult. I'm very sympathetic with the challenges that the administration has. But they just need to say no to white supremacy and follow the law and follow what the majority of Americans want, which is a rational, humane immigration policy.
Yeah, the Stephen Miller, that's a name I've not heard in quite some time. And the specter of Stephen Miller, as you just mentioned, still haunting this administration. And I think you make a very most excellent point, and something to consider, the browning of America, a much, much broader point that will not be finished in this discussion or discussions for quite some time. Brian.
Yeah, and Miller's, you don't hear Miller, but he's still there. He's pulling the strings.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Brian Concannon with the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thank you so much for having me and discussing Haiti.
Absolutely. I appreciate your time, sir. Well, that is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, September 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.